So when you're labeling, one of the things that we like to talk about is how you label in response to some kind of inappropriate or patronizing behavior. So the first type, or the first thing you're going to do, if it's appropriate, is redirect the conversation. So this is when the behavior that's coming at you is kind of putting things off track, but it's not offensive and it's not affecting the long-term relationship. So, you know, sometimes you can kind of let it slide, sometimes you shouldn't. It's what you want to do here is, in a normal label, you're going to ignore the comment and put the conversation kind of back on track. So you're going to say something like, seems like you want to get the best deal here, and refocus them. Seems like your team is important to you. Refocus back to what you're talking about. Okay. This is just when it feels like the focus of the conversation is actually in the wrong place. So you want to make sure you gear it back in the right direction, but you don't want to come out and say something off-putting to the other side, because that's not going to help you at all. So you just refocus a little bit by using that label. The next one is going to be a thought pattern interrupt. This is when the behavior needs to stop. So whatever is happening, it feels like the focus of the negotiation or conversation is turning to you rather than the actual negotiation. So it's disruptive to whatever's happening, and it can be affecting the whole deal. So when you're getting this far, and when it is behavior that needs to stop, it is going to damage the future relationship if you don't take care of it. So what you want to say then is, you know, it seems like you're not interested in whatever, bringing them back on focus a little bit. This makes them consider, hopefully, that the behavior that they're doing may be negatively affecting things that are going on. And you want to make sure you point that out. So behavior needs to stop. So the last one that we talk about, and David, please interrupt me if somebody puts something in the chat that we want to talk about. And if you want to add anything, please just pipe up there. Anybody. The last one is what we call a confronting label. This is very assertive. So you want to be careful when you use it, but this is when the behavior needs to stop and be addressed. So remember, redirecting, you're just labeling before it gets off track. When you're creating the thought pattern interrupt, the behavior needs to stop. So you're gearing them another way to stop whatever the behaviors that they've now suddenly gotten into. The confronting label is when maybe those other two labels haven't worked, or maybe it's just gone off course really quickly. So you want to use that confronting label and label what's happening and address it at the same time. So this comes about a lot of times when people take the liberty to call you cute little names like honey and sweetie. And the way you can deal with that, because this is very assertive, remember, seems like you think it's okay to address me that way. So this is when that behavior makes you feel like you need to put walls up against the other side. And I'm sure everyone on this call at one point or another has been in some kind of conversation where all of a sudden you feel like, whoa, this is not going where I want it to go. This needs to stop. This is when this label is going to come in handy. When you address that actual behavior, calling you honey or calling you sweetie, and force them to face up to it. And Davey, I want you to talk a little bit about this, because you have some interesting stories about dealing with behavior like this.
Yeah, absolutely. I know. We're going to, Sandy's going to call me a few times. I just have about, I have negative patience for being called names or being mansplained to, or like, I just have just absolutely no patience for it. So the idea behind, just to kind of reiterate a couple of things that Sandy has said, the idea behind a label is it's a verbal observation, right? And so frequently how you use a label is in information gathering. When you're wanting someone to talk, to continue on. But what it does is that it really guides a conversation. So you're able to express, you can use it to express understanding, right? Because you say like, you know, it seems like something that I've said has upset you. You can use it to express understanding in that way. But a lot of times, and what we're talking about right here is essentially guiding a conversation, right? That's what a label can be used for, is really guiding where it's going. And so a lot of times when people are talking to us in a certain way, oftentimes because we're a woman, then what we can do is use a label to redirect the whole conversation. So Sandy was using an example of kind of like different layers, right? Of, okay, do we just want to redirect it? Or is it more, do we need to be more assertive about this? So, so the redirect the conversation, you just can say something about the deal, something about what you're talking about. So along the lines of, it seems like you're really interested in what's a good example? Seems like you're really interested. Well, cause we have a few here that I really liked, of what people were like, different fields that people are in, and what we're hoping to gain. So for example, influencing people to join a team, right? It seems like you're really looking for, a team that makes sure that they value you, right? You might say something like that. And that'll just help keep the conversation where you are wanting it to go. But then the other ones, it's really more about kind of stopping behavior, addressing behavior, is what we're talking about right here, but they can be used in a lot of different ways. Sorry, I just like went on for a long time, Sandy.
So no, you're fine. Keep going. No. So Davey has become pretty adept at dealing with those ones that confront because behavior needs to stop and you can't just let it go. You can't just redirect in a like that second layer way when you're causing that thought pattern interrupt to kind of get them, you know, get their attention focused elsewhere. But this is when a behavior needs to stop and you need to point out to them that this is negative behavior that you shouldn't have to put up with. And I remember Brandon talking about a very specific TikTok video.
Oh my gosh, we're revealing so much here. I'm like, okay.
Iwana, we'll get with you in a second. I'm not ignoring you. Just hold on. I promise.
Yeah, absolutely. So essentially, this is a way, because a lot of you have said too that it's kind of what you're wanting to learn here is how to be tactful, firm, making sure that as a woman, it's like, okay, we know that we're coming in with certain people might have biases, right? But that we really need to learn how to be tactful and still firm. This is a great way to do that. So Sandy already said an example that I think is great for, it seems like you think that's okay to call me that. And tone is everything here, and we'll get to that. But like being able to address that behavior, or like say that a colleague is asking you out, right? And it's like, okay, this is totally not appropriate. But you could say something like, it seems like you think it's appropriate to be talking to me that way. Or it seems like you think that this partnership is really different than what it is. Or, right, so you're just kind of making a verbal observation. But what it does is it stops their brain and makes sure that they now have to deal with the fact that their behavior is impeding progress of the partnership, of the deal, whatever it might be.
I'm going to proceed on the idea that everybody at least understands how to construct a label or a mirror. Labels, it seems, it sounds, it looks, you see me, sound, you look. A mirror is a repetition of the last 1 to 3 words-ish, or specific selection. Once you get good at the last 1 to 3 words, you start picking 1 to 3 words out of different portions of the conversation of mirror. So everybody's going to pick 2 things they're passionate about. Everybody's going to pick 2 things they're passionate about. It doesn't matter what those things are. They could be food. They could be dogs. They could be bunny rabbits. I know you're passionate about bunny rabbits. Doesn't matter what those 2 things are. You will pair up with someone next to you. One of you will be the talker, the other person will be the negotiator. The negotiators ask 2 what questions. What are you passionate about? I'm passionate about puppies. What about puppies makes you passionate? That's your second what question. Every response from the negotiator from that point on is a label or a mirror only. It's not, oh, I had puppies growing up. I set it on fire. You know, whatever you did when you were a kid. No sharing of common experiences. Because that's not a label or a mirror. And then when we pair you up and you start out, one of you is a negotiator and the other is a talker, stay in role until we ask you to switch out. If someone is not particularly comfortable with the skills yet and they say, okay, I did this long enough, now let's talk about your passion. Now, we don't want you to do that. We have a very specific sequence going here. These are our reps. How many reps to get a skill? 63. These are our reps. This is the low stakes practice. This is the no stakes practice. Small stakes practice for high stakes results. Here's what it'll look like. Brandon's gonna be the negotiator and Derek is gonna be the talker. So at the beginning, you're gonna be able to ask two questions to get you started. And from there forward is going to be only labels and mirrors. So after you label four, after I have done four or five labels with Derek, then we will start pointing to people in the room to continue the conversation with Derek. So once you get pointed at, you got to come up with a label or mirror. A great way to get picked is to look away. All right, so two questions at the very beginning. First question, what's your passion?
Coaching basketball.
Coaching basketball. And then second question, what about coaching basketball makes you passionate?
It provides me an opportunity with providing a positive male role model in the lives of guys that don't have it.
Guys that don't have it?
Yeah, the community that I coached in a couple of years ago was an immigrant community. Single parent homes, mostly led by women. A lot of times the guys that were on my team were the oldest male in the house, so a lot of responsibility had been thrust upon them. And as a result, some of them, straight off the straight and narrow, unless they were provided an opportunity to participate in organized sports, that's where I came in.
It sounds like in a lot of ways these kids are kind of missing out on life.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I was in their spot, so to speak, when I was coming up. I grew up in a house that didn't have a father. In fact, he could walk through those doors right now, and I wouldn't know it was him. That's how early in my life that he left. So I was raised by a mother who had a heart of gold, and she worked very hard, but she couldn't provide me with that male influence that I needed. But by the grace of God, I could have gone elsewhere.
Sounds like you learned how to be pretty self-sufficient at an early age.
I had to. You had to grow up fast. And the things that were out there that snatched me off the streets, figuratively speaking, have been multiplied tenfold now with these guys. So I know that they're either going to wind up dead, they're going to wind up incarcerated, or they're going to wind up like the next Shirley.
Sounds like you really feel for the fact that what they're missing out on really isn't any fault of their own.
It's not. And so for the 2 hours that I get them every day between the months of November and March, it provides me with an opportunity to provide them with some life skills that'll make them better men, because I think as a male adult, it's incumbent upon me to do that. Label or mirror? Label or mirror? I want you to say it looks like, it seems like, it sounds like, and then give me what it looks like, seems like, sounds like. Intuitively, you know what to say. Now I want to make you say it.
It looks like this is really important to
you. Yeah, it is important to me. Let's face it. These guys are going to get their life lessons from somewhere. And if they're not getting it from me, they're going to get it from somebody in the streets. And then the people in the streets are usually going to send them in the wrong direction. Label or mirror?
Mirror. Wrong direction?
Into the mic.
Wrong direction?
Yeah. So I mentioned earlier they could wind up incarcerated or they could wind up like Shirley. And as an adult, again, my job is to make sure that nobody else becomes a Shirley. label or mirror?
It sounds like Shirley's important to you. I wasn't following that part. I had a legitimate question. What do you mean when you say Shirley?
I didn't ask you to ask a question. I want you to label or mirror. Any question that you can ask can sound like
Shirley?
A mirror. Great. Yeah, Shirley was a young lady I met. She was 7 years old at the time that I met her. And Shirley was a crack baby, which means when her mother was pregnant, she was continuing to ingest cocaine. Shirley was born addicted to cocaine. And she had the requisite behavioral and cognitive issues that a baby addicted to cocaine would. So she was way behind in her development. They put her into foster care because the mother was not obviously competent to raise the child. So Shirley was put into foster care, and that's when I met her. Label or mirror.
And you met her where?
Not a question. Label or mirror. Any question that you can ask can be turned into a label. So it looks like, it seems like, it sounds like.
Sounds like you had a great opportunity to run into this little girl at one time, and it meant a lot to you.
Subsequently, yeah, it was a great opportunity. At the time, I didn't see it as such. Because when I met her, her foster mother's boyfriend had taken the bottom end of a cane and shoved it in her mouth and broke her teeth out because she spilled toothpaste on the floor. And so when I think about my responsibility to the youth of today, it starts with how I saw Shirley the night that she was on the gurney in the hospital, and I'm taking photographs of her injury. And this little girl that has had everything done to her is laying on the gurney showing me some cigarette burns on her forearm, and she still had enough sunshine in her to smile. And I said, and I still have her picture on my desk with that smile. And I said, if this kid can go through all of that, she needs a fighter. And so my job is to fight for all the Shirleys of the world, label or mirror.
It sounds like you believe this program can really make a difference in children's lives.
Well, it's a leap, but my basketball program, by extension, will lessen the opportunity for kids to fall through the cracks, either into jail or to have their lives impacted in other negative ways. Now, I'm going to stop there. You guys see how much information you can gather by just using labels and mirrors. If you will imagine the X that I stood on the floor represents, I like coaching basketball, right? How far off of that X did you move me?
Quite a bit.
When I first said I like coaching basketball, figuratively or literally, some of you rolled your eyes and said, oh, another jockhead. Another guy who's going to start talking about the virtues of Steph Curry, right? But what did you learn about me? Travis said, I grew up without a father. What else did you learn? Specifically, what did you learn?
That you help youth.
That I help youth. Good. What else did you learn? I have a very big heart. Do I sound like somebody you want to do business with?
Absolutely. A lot of behavioral things, how you respond to things.
What do you mean?
Given a difficult situation, you took it and turned it into a positive.
Good, good. What else did you learn? Want to give back. What else did you learn?
Respect your mother.
I respect my mother. What else?
What inspired you?
What inspired me, Monica said. So the point is, you moved me off the X. You know a lot about me. Character-wise, behavior-wise. How much information did you give me? How much do I know about you? Nothing. Just using labels and mirrors. That's how strong they work. That's how powerful they are.
And negatives have 3 to 9 times the impact on decision making. Why you won't make a deal with me is 9 times more important than why you will. Isn't that the opposite of all of your coaching in business? What are you supposed to do when you interact with someone in business? You're supposed to give them what? You're supposed to give them their value proposition, right? Isn't your value proposition proposing positives, it's got a third of the effectiveness is diffusing the negatives. Labeling negatives does what? All right, so that's what we all feel. He said labeling negatives reinforces the negatives. It's the opposite. Labeling negatives diffuses negatives. Every time. Now, you don't like that for two reasons. First of all, you're thinking, well, if it reinforces positives, why doesn't it reinforce negatives? That's just logical. Secondly, you're going to say, oh, no, it does not. Because every time I've tried to call out a negative, it's blown up in my face. And I had a PR guy once says, never introduce a negative, never introduce a negative. I don't know how many of you remember Richard Nixon when he resigned, but before he resigned, he stood up in front of the American public and said, I am not a crook. Did Nixon label the negative by saying, I'm not a crook? What did he do? He denied it. That's a 2-millimeter shift. Michael Vick is on a sports show a couple years ago. He's talking about another quarterback. And he starts out by saying, like, look, I don't want to make it sound like I'm disrespectful. And then he made his observation. As soon as he got off the phone, the announcer said, you know what? As soon as somebody says, I don't want to sound disrespectful, the next thing they're going to be is disrespectful. Imagine if instead Vic would have said, I'm sure it's going to sound disrespectful. Here's my opinion. Then he got off the phone and said, you know that Vic guy's a straight shooter. So the 2-millimeter shift, and why we're so worried about negatives is because we've been used to denying them. You cannot plant a negative with a label. What if I say to you, seems like you don't like me. And at that point in time, you don't have that feeling at all. What's your reaction? You go, oh, yeah, I like you fine. You don't go, oh, now that you mention it, I do dislike you. This is our single most powerful skill. This is how we get out of this stuff so fast, so much faster than everybody else. This is how Derek is coaching people, diffusing negatives, and getting people to resolve deals in 7 to 10 days max that have been struggling with deals for months. I called him on the phone the other day, and I said, anybody you're consulting in a specific deal, have you coached anybody in any interaction that's lasted longer than 10 days? He was like, yeah, I don't think so. Anybody more than 7 days? A couple might have gone over 7. 18 months of negotiations resolved in 7 days with this approach. It's insane. This is the insane superpower. This is why people are killing it.
We're going to discuss the top 10 black swan go-to labels and when to use them. Now let's dive in. Number one, black swan go-to label is, it looks like something just crossed your mind. Number two is, it seems like you're uncomfortable with that. And number three is, it seems like you're hesitant. Now, these are broadly categorized into being used for what scientists would call affect shifts. What's an affect shift? Change in body language, change in tone of voice. Somebody looks down, somebody looks up, somebody looks to the side. Affect shifts. Now, the tricky thing about this is you don't know for sure what their change in body language actually means. Like, they could be lying. They could be uncomfortable because they've given you the best deal they already could. There's a whole variety of reasons. What you want to do is find out what's behind the change in the affect shift, the change in the body language, the change in the tone of voice. It's pretty much like finding out what's behind the question. Before you proceed, you want to make sure that you know. So the first three labels are for changes in affect shifts. Number four, it seems like you have a reason for saying that. Or you could give it seems like you have a reason for saying that. Notice the two different changes in inflection, two completely different impacts, two different ways to do the same thing. Number five, very similar label. But instead of for saying that, we're going to focus on their action. It seems like you have a reason for, and then you label the action. Doing that. It seems like you have a reason for doing that. We had a contractor one time talking to a subcontractor, says, seems like you have a reason for not finishing the work. Subcontractor didn't finish the work, needs to find out what's going on behind not finishing the work. And so he just hangs a label on the action. Seems like you have a reason for not finishing the work. Now, interestingly enough, any one of these could be mislabels. Mislabels are fine. What did the contractor say when he did what did the subcontractor say when he ended up doing the label, which he was just doing it genuinely? He said, no, really, I don't. That's one of the magic things about labels. Mislabels can give you more information than maybe the label could have in the first place. So this broad category here, second category, for our next couple labels we just did was labeling behavior or statements that you're uncertain of or even that you think might be wrong. So here's what I want you to do so you can reach your full potential as a negotiator. First, go to our website, blackswanltd.com. Now, look over here, put your cursor on resources. Put it there, highlight it, go to free ebooks and guides. We're now in resources. Scroll down. You can see 5 negotiation tactics for dealing with difficult people. Download it now. Click on that. Here's a description of what you get with this guide. And it's free. So, yeah, we want your email. We want you to reach your full potential. Put in your first name, your last name, your email address, and click on the stuff that you think is how you can advance, how you're going to get better. You'll be glad you did. Now, back to our video. Now, number 6 is a great label to use at impasse, or when you're at loggerheads, or when you can't get past where the two of you are, and you don't want to make a concession. You shouldn't make concessions. Don't make concessions. Never split the difference. So here's a label to use when you're at impasse. It sounds like there's nothing I can say to get you to change your mind. Or it sounds like there's nothing I could say to get you to change your mind. Now, this came up in a negotiation. Wasn't the first label that the person using it used. He'd been labeling for a while. He'd been very interactive. He'd been building rapport, been using tactical empathy. So, of course, situation drives strategy. You're at the end of a negotiation. You're at an impasse after you've made a great deal of really good effort to try to make the deal work. Last-ditch effort to snatch victory from the jaws of defeat. If you've approached with tactical empathy the entire way, it seems like there's nothing I can say to get you to change your mind. What happened in this negotiation? Since it was a genuine effort the entire way, the person on the other side said, no, as a matter of fact, here's what I want, and laid it out and they made the deal. Next, here's a ridiculous one that black swans on our team are using on a regular basis. Very counterintuitive. It's at the opening when someone says to you, how are you today? Of course, it's in a business conversation. They've called you, and they've called you, and they said, how are you today? Here's what the super sharp black swans are saying in return. It sounds like you have a place you want to start. That's crazy, right? Yeah. But if they called you, they got a place they want to start. And how are you today is really, they're checking to see whether or not you're prepared to start where they want to start. They put preparation into this conversation. So this really cuts to the chase. 2/3 of the time, actually more than that, the other person is relieved and they jump right into it. You've built rapport. You've jumped to the heart of the matter. They're relieved. You saved a massive amount of time. Now, every now and then, somebody really cares how you are today. They care in general. And when they do, they're going to say, all right, we'll get to that. They're going to be nice and friendly about it. But how are you today? Because they really want to know. Then you can exchange those pleasantries. Most of the time, the exchange of pleasantries is just to see if you're ready to get down to business. You can get down to business and be friendly and build rapport all at once. And this is a great way to do that. So that was number 7. Sounds like you have a place you want to start. Next category for when they say the price is too high. This is our 8, number 8 go-to label. It seems like the value is just not there for you. Or it seems like the value's just not there for you. Notice the first one was a downward declarative, downward declaring tone of voice. And the second one was the upward inquisitive, genuinely curious tone of voice. Same words, land completely differently. Feel free to experiment with both. Look, if the price is not right for them, it ain't about price. It's about what they're getting for the price. Don't cut your price. Pivot into the value conversation. Find out what's going on the other side. Use the label. If it's an effective label, if it's accurate, they're going to tell you that it is. If it's a mislabel, then they're just going to test your price. They're going to pivot back, and you're going to know that too. Either way, you shouldn't be cutting your price. You should be making the deal better. That's one of the ways the black swans do this stuff. Next category. Labels for what we refer to as proof of life. What's proof of life? Is there a deal, and is the deal with you? Those are two tricky issues. Number one, they could be doing due diligence. They're not going to give you the deal. Number two, they could be looking for free consulting. They're not going to do the deal. Number three, you're the rabbit. They're looking for you to drive the price down on the favorite. You're the fool in the game. If you don't know who the fool in the game is, it's probably you. How do you deal with this? Proof of life. Is there a deal, and is the deal with you? We got two great labels for you to use here. This first one, number 9, is kind of a tricky, different way to tee up your label. Instead of it sounds like, it's going to be, it doesn't seem, or it doesn't sound. It doesn't sound. Notice a difference in the beginning. So, number 9, it doesn't seem like you're ready to make a commitment. Or, it doesn't seem like you're ready to make a commitment to us. Could be done with an upward inflection. It doesn't seem like you're ready to make a commitment to us. It doesn't seem like you're ready to make a commitment. Again, downward and upward inflection. You get a lot of fake negotiations. There's a fair amount of data out there that says the 20% of your opportunities are fake opportunities. Since we've been teaching proof of life to people in a black swan method, we found that the numbers are typically much higher than 20%, may go up as high as 80%. You got to feel it out a little bit. This is an effective label. This is appropriate. You should be prepared to use this label in the first half hour of the first conversation if you're gaining a sense, based on our methodology and teaching, that you might be the fool in the game. This is completely appropriate to do that. And that was number 9. Now, get ready for number 10. Number 10 is, it seems like you're still shopping around. Or, it seems like you're still shopping around. Again, I gave it to you with both of the inflections. And this is one of the values of our YouTube videos. Again, these are appropriate if you're sensing that there's a proof of life issue in the deal. And if they're mislabels and they're not still shopping around or they're not ready to make a commitment, people love mislabels because it gives them a chance to jump in and correct. No. We're ready to make a commitment. No. We're not shopping around. Mislabels are great at uncovering the truth, because when you mislabel, the urge to correct is overwhelming. It's one of our laws of negotiation gravity. So don't be afraid to mislabel. Now, of course, you're not doing it on purpose. Actually, sometimes people do mislabel on purpose. But there's no problem with mislabeling as long as you're trying to get it right. All right. That was our list of top 10 go-to Black Swan Method labels.
Going down to Joe, what do you do differently if you're preparing to negotiate with someone that's Black Swan trained? First of all, I'm giddy. I'm excited. I'm never more anxious to negotiate with someone than if I know that they've been trained in Black Swan skills. And it's really for a couple of reasons. Number one, our skills are designed to create collaboration in places where it's really hard to find. It's designed to build trust, respect, and rapport in an instant, and create a collaborative environment right on the tail end of that. I'm going to be excited to deal with anybody that approaches negotiation in that fashion, because we're going to make a good deal. And then the second part is, if they are in fact Black Swan trained, and I'm as familiar with the skills as I am, and as a lot of you are on this call, it's going to be really easy for me to tell if they're trying to manipulate or influence based on how they use the skills. If they're actively using the skills to cultivate, I'm going to be able to tell. If they're actively using the skills to force issues down my throat, or, which I know a lot of us are guilty of, create the how am I supposed to do that moment way before it's necessary, right? We haven't actually collaborated or gathered much intel between each other, but I can feel you walking me up to how am I supposed to do that, because you're trying to put me in a bad spot. You want to walk me into that question because you know how effective it is immediately. I'm going to see it coming because I'm familiar with Black Swan skills. And if that's what your intention is, then there's going to be some instant pullback from me. If anything, when I feel that how am I supposed to do that coming, I'm going to fight it. How am I supposed to do that? Sounds like you've thought a lot about this. It sounds like you probably got something in mind that works really well for you, right? If anything, if I find them to be manipulative in the usage of Black Swan skills, I'm going to use the Black Swan skills to punish them. And by punish, I don't mean take advantage or make them feel bad, but let them know they're gonna be out-dueled, right? You walking me into the how am I supposed to do that moment before you've discovered what my Black Swans are, you're gonna feel that if I see your intentions to be manipulative. So that's just something to keep in mind. You know what they're doing if they're trained, right? So you got a huge advantage. If the counterpart's immovable, what do you do when your counterpart takes an immovable stance on one? Great question. First of all, summarize them. Get it, that's right. If they're immovable, they probably got 5 to 20 reasons as to why that is. Explain to them why they're immovable to get it, that's right. First of all, it's going to loosen them up a little bit, because if you do create the oxytocin moment with that's right, they're gonna be much more likely. Well, here's something I didn't offer to you earlier. Here's a thought that you might want. That's one piece. Another thing, as a last stitch effort, and this is something we haven't really focused on in teaching in a long time, but as a last stitch effort, right, and not all deals can or should be made, you can always say, it sounds like there's nothing I can do to change your mind. It sounds like it's an impossibility for you to want to look at this differently. Sounds like there's nothing I can say to affect your current mindset, right? Even if they're immovable, there's still an emotional moment that is created there, and we need to explore it before we exit or move forward. And then the last part, accusations, audits. using the skills to tie yourself to having caused the anger or high emotion, simply in the form of, it seems like I really upset you. You know, I think, and this has actually got me thinking about another thing in regards to, we're all guilty of, to a certain extent, slapping someone in the face in a negotiation and then looking at them and going, it seems like you're upset, which is a really, really bad way to label. It's actually extremely insulting to be the direct cause of whatever the crux of their issue is, and then label it as if you're at arm's length, right? You hit somebody in the knee with a bat and destroy all their ligaments and then go, seems like you're having trouble walking. We never want to do that. And it can inflame the situation much worse, as I'm sure a lot of you could imagine. And so connecting it to, like, it seems like I really hurt you. Seems like I said or did something that really threw you off kilter. Connect yourself to having cause. You can use an iMessage to do so, a label. The choice is yours.
Who was the talker?
I was the talker.
What was your passion?
Skiing.
Skiing, awesome. Did he label in mirror?
He labeled a lot.
Labeled a lot?
Yep.
Did he mirror?
Yes, once or twice.
Okay, mostly labels, cool.
Mostly labels.
Did he come out of the labels? Did he ever do anything wrong?
There was one time where I think he said, it feels like. That kind of tripped me up in the pattern there. But for the most part, it was pretty solid and, you know, got me off the X, if you will.
How was it for you?
Felt very natural. You know, I didn't feel like anything. I didn't feel like it was artificial.
Awesome, okay. And, all right, so the labeling and mirroring, I don't know how much opportunity you've had to had to practice up to now. I don't know how many reps you've gotten in. I get a sense from what you were telling me before. You've been applying a book, so you've probably been labeling and mirroring some.
Yeah, that's accurate.
How was the exercise?
It was good. It really felt like a natural flow of a conversation with, you know, somebody tells you something about themselves, and then suddenly he's off and running into way different. It's not about skiing. It's not at all about skiing.
What did it become?
Well, if I go to the deep dive, right, he's trying to develop that camaraderie he developed through skiing that he didn't get from team sports, where he could be individual, but he could be with friends, where he developed lifelong relationships, and now he's at a point in his life where that's once a year. He wants to be able to develop that in a community he lives in.
Okay, now how long were we in the exercise, roughly? 3 minutes, maybe. Now, based on what you just heard about these two gentlemen, this gentleman right here, how many of his core values as a human being and as a businessman do you know? Lifelong relationships, camaraderie, team player, a critical part of his life. You know, so these quickly uncover issues in very short periods of time that drive relationships, which means friendships, and business relationships, yes? And, you know, I did a keynote with the Apollo Private Equity Group just a couple of days ago here in town. And they were like, well, can't you still go play golf? So, and I said, all right, so you guys go play golf together for what? To find out what we just found out in the last 3 minutes. Only instead of being on a golf course for 8 hours, it took 3 minutes here. So this is why, and some of you are discovering this already, this is why your professions accelerate. You begin to dial into people very quickly. And you create a great relationship between the two of you, and it takes 3 minutes. And I can tell you something, every single time that Brandon and Derek do the exercise in front of the group, I learn more about Derek. And I've known Derek since 2001. Is that when we first met, probably, roughly? And I'm learning more about him every time. Thank goodness Brandon's good at this stuff. Right? So this is how it's applied. And those of you who are still getting your reps in to get over your awkwardness, you heard a gentleman here describe what it was like to be labeled in an environment where he knows he's being labeled in an exercise, in a room, at a seminar. And he said it was natural, it was comfortable, it was fine. If you have any misgivings about these skills at all, this environment should tell you when your counterpart is completely good with it and they know you're using techniques on them. You will never encounter a person that you're talking to that's more aware of the fact that techniques are being deployed on them in the moment, and everybody here is okay with it. So it's not that you're using a technique, it's what your objective is, to create a better relationship. You should never be concerned about whether or not they don't like the techniques. If somebody on the other side doesn't like the techniques, it's not because the techniques have shortcomings. It's telling you that there's a pretty good chance this is someone you don't want to do business with. If someone is openly telling you they do not want to collaborate with you, what are they telling you? If I'm communicating to you, I don't want you to know about me.
We had a comment. They don't trust you.
They don't trust you. Yeah. All right, so there's an interesting thing, too. Now, if they don't want you to know these things, now your further diagnosis is uncover what the trust issues are. Now, maybe you're never going to get past it, but that's a great observation. It's a trust issue, and the flip side of that might be that once this person trusts me, they trust so fully and so completely, that's why they're so defensive. So how hard is it going to be to get on the other side of that wall?
This video is about labels. The ultimate negotiation tool. Sometimes we think of it as the ultimate MacGyver tool. What makes it a MacGyver tool? Well, a MacGyver tool is really simple and incredibly effective, ridiculously effective. To do your labels right, you got to keep them simple. Stick to the format. It seems like, it sounds like, it looks like. You seem, you sound, you look. We have a great negotiator that loves to say it feels like. Stick to that simple format. We're intentionally leaving the word I out. I is a thought interrupter, a pattern interrupter. When you use the word I, it draws attention to yourself. It interrupts the other side's thinking, and you're using labels to gather information. We know from negotiation that you add this to gather information. A crazy thing is, asking questions is not always the best way to gather information. Labels work well more of the time than asking questions do. Labels trigger stream of consciousness reactions. You might say to somebody, what are you thinking about this? You might label them instead and say, seems like you're giving this a lot of thought. Or it seems like you're thinking about something here. Or it seems like you saw some things you like. Either one of those is going to trigger a much more unvarnished flow of thoughts from the other side. One of the people who's really learned this stuff and is doing a great job of applying this in the real estate area calls it unlocking the floodgates of truth talk. Happens to be a woman that's applying this and seeing the insights, and not the least bit surprising because women have a tendency to pick this stuff up faster than men do. That doesn't mean men can't be great at it also, just that for whatever reason, women seem to get a head start on understanding this and applying it really quickly. This is emotional intelligence-based negotiation. One of the crazy things about this is that when Brandon and I brought these hostage negotiation techniques out of hostage negotiation into the business world, we didn't think labels were that big of a deal. I can tell you now that we both use them so much that we can work our way entirely through a negotiation only using labels. When you get good at them, you respect their simplicity, and you apply them, you can use them all over the place. One of the main things that makes labels incredibly versatile is the fact that all three types like them a lot. We've done a lot of polling. We've got a lot of reason to believe that the world pretty much breaks up into three types: assertives, analysts, and accommodators, across the board, regardless of gender or ethnicity. We probably polled at least 2,000 people in this regard. We got a fair amount of data. And in polling all these people, in the different classes we've taught, we frequently run exercises where we ask them, of the 9 negotiation skills, which skills would you most prefer your counterpart use with you in order to make a great deal with you? All three types pick labels as number 1 or number 2. So while you're still trying to get a feel for the other side and draw a bead on what type they are, labels will always be your highest percentage shot at the very beginning when you're proceeding. And then if you find out that they resonate really well with labels, you just simply stick to them. It's your safest bet. And the way you go from being barely good enough to get by to being a superstar is just by increasing your odds a little bit at a time. Labels increase your odds. Get good at them. Practice them simply. Practice every day. Get your reps in. And they will serve you well. How much practice should you get in? An hour a day. Make an hour label hour. Label at noon. Label over lunch. Label from 7 to 8 every day. Whatever time it is. Get your practice in. Make a cheat sheet of labels. Keep it by your phone. Your cheat sheet should especially include labels of negative dynamics. Fill in a blank. It seems like you hate X. It seems like you dislike X. It seems like X is a problem for you. Have those fill in a blank labels by your phone. Have them ready. They will serve you well.
Would there be a better way to possibly get the same information, but not asking no-oriented questions, like maybe labels, mislabeling?
All right, so what was the question again?
So if I were to ask, is it true, yada, 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 would there be a better way rather than just no-orienting it? Would you use a better tool, for instance?
You know, like potentially a label, although, you know, there are times, and I'm going to ask you to make it into a label for me. So make it into a label.
It sounds like you've written the book, Never Split the Difference.
Right. Or it seems like, yeah. Sounds like, seems like, looks like, feels like. Yeah. And, you know, and so that is actually a great exercise. If you've got the yes question, you write it down. You want to substitute something else in. Substitute a couple of other skills. A no-oriented question, a label, that's that much more warm-up for your brain to get ready, give you that much more preparation. Because at some point in time when you communicate with people, you're going to find that one of those is going to hit them exactly right, depending upon their personality, the moment, you know, how much sleep they got, what they had to eat, their circadian rhythm. There's all these different things. One of those skills is going to hit their brain exactly right, and it's going to really unlock a truthful response. The floodgates of truth talk is one of our clients once said. So mm-hmm. I like your thinking, man. You're showing some agility in your thought. Very good. Very impressed.
I tried to come up with as many questions as I could last night, and this is the only one I really could that was really strong. But
all right, good. Yeah. Anyway. All right, good. We're gonna move on. Thank you for joining.
I appreciate you.
We have a lovely parting gift for you. You should subscribe to The Edge. All right. Thanks,
thank
man.
You,
nice
Justin.
Talking to you. It was a lot of fun. Lay it on me. What do you got?
All right. So ghosting is a problem, but I think one of the worst problems, especially whether it's sales or deal making, which is what I'm in, stay in touch, right? The prospect, the other party, they want you to stay in touch. You don't stay in touch enough, you become forgotten. If you stay in touch too closely, you are annoying. Any suggestions on tactfully or tactically staying in touch and making sure you're moving the needle with them?
Yeah. So their last words to you is stay in touch. What's the prompt here?
Yeah, usually it's this question I get asked a lot. So it's usually we're in long sales cycles, pretty complex deals. They tend to like you, whatever, but they're not ready to move forward with the negotiation, the deal, the contract, or whatever. Stay in touch. They're not saying no, which I'd rather they ghost or say no because then we can move on, but stay in touch. So what would be, you know, a couple of ideas you might think of how to stay in touch? You know, that's that.
No. Let's rethink this. First of all, that's the same as a maybe, and you got to treat maybes as if they're no's. So that's mm-hmm. where you got to proceed. After saying stay in touch, it's either flat no, they're not going to do it, or they have misgivings that you're not revealing. Mm-hmm. So you know that to be true. Like, are you keeping your percentages, your win rate percentage, your length of time to an outcome,
and your percentage of successes on your stay in touches?
A percentage of stay in touches to success, yes. We call it more of a pull-through yield, meaning deals we put in the pipeline to success ratio, it's really high. It's about 85%. But this is more the...
You answered my question. Hold on.
Yeah.
Stay in touch as a category only. You can tell me what percentage of the stay in touch people, let's call them a zebra or a giraffe or a thoroughbred. I don't care. Mm-hmm. They're one profile. Mm-hmm. Stay in touch. Can you tell me what percentage of those close and how long it takes to close? Yes or no?
Yes, I could. Yes.
Okay. So can you, so first of all, it's not a sin to not get the deal. It's a sin to take a long time to not get the deal.
Correct.
So if they're saying stay in touch, what do you know to be true?
That they're not saying no. They're somewhat amenable to terms, but whether it's timing or pressure or something on their side that's not motivating them to be enough to turn the dial to let's sign the retainer.
All right, so they have misgivings or they lack pressure or they don't see the immediate value. Nobody says stay in touch on something that they see immediate value to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right? Otherwise, they'd execute. Sure. If they see immediate value to it or if they have pressure to execute, they'd execute.
Mm-hmm.
So
good point.
The response is going to be a label. Stay in touch. Sounds like you have misgivings.
It's a good point.
Stay in touch. Sounds like there are other things that are pressuring you. Now, they're going to be much more likely to talk with you about the barriers than they are to talk about what's going to hook them.
Mm-hmm.
Because people are comfortable talking about what's getting in the way because they don't feel there's a commitment involved. So they're free. I'm free to tell you what the barriers are. It's up to you to solve them. If you want to say, well, what would it take to make this deal? I don't want to say that because it's going to back me into a corner.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to focus on the barriers instead. And you probably want to go after that with labels. So I would never, you know, and I got to tell you something. Nobody in my business development team goes into stay in touch mode. And a lot of what we've learned will be inspired by similar to Jim Camp, Start With No, 2002 book. I work with Jim. We collaborated over a lot of stuff. Me and his sons, Jim has since deceased. Their whole approach was to get somebody to make a decision, yes mm-hmm. or no. But every conversation was designed to make a decision. And stay in touch is to avoid decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a maybe, and it's never, never land, and you cannot monetize maybe. To some degree, you can monetize we're not making this deal because then you can move on. So I would never go into stay in touch mode. I get stay in touch. What do you know to be true? You know they don't see the value right now. You know they're being pressured in other areas. You know they have misgivings. You know those things to be true.
Mm-hmm.
Throw it out with a label. Focus in on that. They're going to be much more likely to talk with you.
I like the take on that. Very good. I love it. Thank you. You're a rock star, yeah, man. But you know.
That was a great question. Thank you very much for the question.
Thank you. Pleasure.
Do you know that in each culture is different now that we have one of our members that it's from London. It's different. They make jokes and sometimes for us it's difficult to understand those jokes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because for them are really funny and for us they may sound a bit rude. So right. I would like to know, like, how does this work on culture and language and countries and
right. So this is taught in hostage negotiation around the world. So these skills work no matter what culture you're in, no matter what language you're speaking. I will add a caveat to that because sometimes when you're in a different language, the wording might not translate exactly the same. So you have to work a little bit to make sure that you're conveying the same message that we're saying in English. I know I worked with a Canadian one time who was French speaking, and he had a hard time with some of this stuff because of the way the labels sounded when you said them in French. So we had to kind of come up with a little workaround for him, and he was able to do it just fine. But hostage negotiators all over the world use this stuff with great success. They use it on anybody. And the reason why it works that way is because we're dealing with human behavior and emotions. So it's the human nature response that we're speaking to when we use these skills. So if you are coming across the right way, if you are coming across with the proper tone of voice, and you're using the skills as we describe them to you, you shouldn't have an issue with it. Now, there are some things, and when we get to accusation audit, you'll see what I'm saying, but you do a list of accusations audit at the beginning of a conversation.
Yeah, I mean, to Sandy's point of being able to kind of stop inappropriate jokes, right? Whether that's gender bias, because I saw that in the chat, Lisa, too. Whether they're gender bias jokes, inappropriate cultural jokes, right? That people think are okay, right? That's kind of why this label is great. You can use it for several different things, right? If someone's making a joke, an inappropriate joke about your culture, you can say, it seems like you think it's okay to joke in that way, right? Or it seems like you thought that was an appropriate joke to use with me, right? And it gets them to stop, and then they have to report for their behavior, essentially.
One that works a lot too is my favorite go-to label, seems like you have a reason for. So you can go with, seems like you have a reason for thinking that. Seems like you have a reason for saying that. Seems like you have a reason for feeling that way. Or if someone asks you a question that you're not really sure you want to answer, because people do ask lousy questions, and you want to make sure you know where this is going before you give an answer, you can say, it seems like you have a reason for asking that. Then they'll explain to you why they're asking, and then you'll know exactly where to go, and it'll save you time in the long run. But that seems like you have a reason for label also works with the inappropriate behavior, especially when you're just kind of creating the thought pattern interrupt. Because if you say to someone, if they've said something off color or inappropriate to you, or tried to take the conversation in a direction you don't want it to go, and you say, seems like you have a reason for saying that, and you just go silent and then let them think about what they just said. And I've had this happen before where they realize it and then they say, oh, I'm so sorry. And then they realize how they've kind of stepped over a line, and they will back off of it. And it's better for them to get the hint from you and back off of it so that you don't have to go to that very assertive, pushy label, you know, like when you completely address the behavior. It seems like you think it's okay to call me that or to refer to me that way, because that's more assertive. So this seems like you have a reason for is a great one to kind of fall on in almost any situation. Because you just put that verb in there, looking, feeling, saying, whatever it is, and it'll work with that label. So is there anything in the chat that we need to address?
No, I think we're just chatting in the chat, so.
Okay, it's great. It's where that chatting is supposed to happen.
Yeah.
All right, so we have labels, we've talked about labels, how you use them, but why? Okay, why labels? Why are they one of the fabulous five for us? They play to our intuitive strength. Women are really good at picking up on the underlying dynamics of a conversation. You're much better at discerning the why behind. Part of that is because women are good listeners. So you can listen and you can get sometimes a double meaning from things. And this is why women sometimes, when you're in a conversation, you know when it starts going off the rails sooner than other people in the room, because you're able to see those dynamics and how things are going. And, you know, I blame some of that for how women have been treated all through the years, but you see when the car starts going down the wrong road. Okay. And that's a horrible thing to say, because don't we always yell about men for never asking directions? And then I just like use that. It almost sounded like a pun. But you just have an ability as a woman to observe and get the feeling for those dynamics that are underneath the situation that's happening. So that's why labels really do play to us, because we can label that dynamic that someone else in the room might not be able to see. This also allows you, when you use a label, to take that deep dive. Okay, you can deep dive down into someone's psyche, and it doesn't feel as intrusive. So this allows some space in the conversation that keeps the other side at ease. And Davey, if you want to speak to that, because.
Yeah, because here's the thing, labels, anytime you have a question in your mind, you can turn it into a label. And that's kind of what we recommend doing, actually, is because a lot of people can feel threatened by questions. And they feel like, oh, you're interrogating me. Like, have you ever gotten that, right? Like, oh, am I in an interrogation? You're like, no, that's called a conversation. But the thing is, you can just do label, you can label instead. And that's a really great way of, no one's going to be like, oh, I'm in an interrogation. Just turn it into a label. So let's say that you were thinking, okay, I really want to know more about where this person is at with the deal, right? So you're thinking, okay, I want to ask them, like, okay, how long do you think it's going to take to talk to your team about this, right? You can say, it seems like there's kind of a process to talk to your team about this. Like, it might take a couple of weeks. And then they end up telling you everything that you wanted to know. But exactly. they're still at ease because you're not asking them a question.
And this does speak to being able to get information from the other side without feeling like, one, you're interrogating them, two, you come across as threatening, or three, you come across with that mom feeling, you know what I mean? That, like, your mother, why did you do this? Where are you going? What's happening? You know what I mean? So you don't want people to feel that from you. So you can get information by using a label instead of a question, which is how we gather the information, just like Davey said, and you don't come across as threatening in any way. Because let's face it, powerful women do come off as threatening sometimes. And it's not a good way to be, because when you come off as threatening, it really turns off the other side. Because one of the main things that helps our skills work is being likable. Coming off likable, one of the ways you do that is by avoiding direct questioning and using labels to gather information so that you do come across less threatening.